Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shad Markowitz. We are your hosts for this weekend show, also your hosts throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and our podcast, Corlin Economics Report. We every day are commentating on the markets and interviewing companies that have either caught your attention, all of our listeners, or caught our attention due to some of the recent news that has come out. Now, in this weekend show, we're really going to focus on companies here because, look, fact of the matter is, when you're looking at the precious metals, especially sector, the market's been pretty slow and it's been a tough market. We've commentated a lot on different technical levels to watch, and unfortunately, at least in the near term, stuff hasn't changed all that much. So I think it's the most important thing, especially at the end of the year here, to look into companies that might be on your shopping list, companies that are on our shopping list, because of the fact that, look, it really does feel like a lot of these resource companies and resource stocks are on sale, but unfortunately, they've been on sale almost all year. We're kicking off the show with Robert Sinn, also known as Goldfinger, over at CEO.ca. Now, Robert, we bring you on the show on a regular basis to commentate on the markets and also the companies. And again, we're going to be focusing on the companies and on an article that you released back at the tail end of November. November 26th, you entitled this article, Goldfinger's 2021 Tax Loss Silly Season Shopping List. Now, you outline, I believe it's 5 or 6 companies within this article. We'll get to those companies, but first, let me ask you, look, it feels like every explorer is down 70% this year, or at least from their highs of 2020. What isolates certain companies for you to say, this one's better than the other one, even though they have all pulled back?
Hey, Corey. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on to talk about the tax loss silly season shopping list. Yeah, I put out that article a couple of weeks ago, actually the day after Thanksgiving. The market was getting hit very, very hard on that Friday. And, you know, yeah, a lot of companies are down big in 2021 in the gold and silver sector, especially among the juniors. And so, yeah, I wrote in the article, actually the first paragraph, I started with like 20 different possibilities, candidates, you know, for this list. And I had to narrow it down to 6. And it wasn't an easy process. It wasn't easy to make these choices. But some things that I did focus on were quality of management teams. All 6 of these companies have strong management teams with CEOs that I have confidence in. Most of them are not, except for Angold, which just announced the financing, a small $2 million financing, you know, with the exception of Angold, none of them has to raise money this second. They could all wait 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the road, raise money, hopefully under better market conditions, maybe after they put out some good news, right? And then another thing is that these companies are not really old, expired cartons of milk. Most of them are relatively new to the market. A few of them launched either in late 2020 or early 2021 amid high expectations. Like with the case of Angold and Outback in particular, when these companies started trading, sentiment in the sector was much stronger and they kind of came to market at pretty high valuations. And so that was a ripe set up for, you know, disappointment. Obviously, new company, high expectations, relatively high market valuation. And then you have this year of 2021 where gold and silver kind of trend sideways to lower, and companies are struggling to complete drill programs on time, and the labs are super slow in bringing back the results from drill programs. And so that's just created this perfect storm where, you know, companies like Outback and Angold are down big, very, very big year to date, and certainly from their all-time highs. You know, with Angold, it was at 53 cents at one point early in the year, recently traded down to about 12 cents. With Outback, it was above a dollar at one point earlier in the year, and it's trading about 21, 22 cents right now. So we've seen some really big haircuts here, and the valuations and the negativity around many of these companies make them attractive to me, actually.
So let's get into some of these companies. You've already mentioned Angold and Outback. We will dive a bit more into those, but I do want to start off with one of the larger companies within this list, Elevation Gold Mining. Now, this company also used to be known as Northern Vertex Mining. That's when Eclipse Gold Mining and Northern Vertex came together. They recently rebranded into Elevation Gold Mining. They are traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol ELVT and on the OTC market under the symbol EVGDF. Now, this company is a production company. They have the Moss Mine up and running that is cash flowing for them. They also see some growth potential around there. And they also have this Hercules asset, that one, more of an exploration play that came from Eclipse. What do you like about this company? Where do you see the catalyst coming from?
I would say Elevation is probably the most hated one on this list of all the six companies. It has a lot of negativity around it, it seems. A lot of people are very sour, especially with the chart going from basically $3 to under a dollar now. You know, we're at 84 cents, making a new low. As we have this conversation, the market cap is $51 million in Canada, which, as you said, this is an operating mine in Northwest Arizona. 30 to 40,000 ounces of gold output per year. It's heap leach, you know, near surface, you know, oxide gold. I was at the mine in May of this year, and I really like the operations. I like the location of the project near infrastructure and a great mining trend, the Walker Lane trend of Northwestern Arizona. You know, you're a 2-hour drive from Vegas, 3 or 4 hour drive from Phoenix. Lots of high-quality skilled mining labor in the area. So there's a lot of things to like about that. You know, what's not to like, I guess? Well, I guess what's not to like is that it's obviously higher cost. You know, we're talking about $1,300 to $1,400 all-in cost on those gold ounces. So not a low-cost mine by any stretch. And obviously, part of that higher cost is the scale. You know, 30,000 ounces is not a huge mine, right? And so the opportunity here is to get Moss up to something like 45 or 50,000 ounces a year and add some scale to it and try to get that all-in cost down back under $1,200. And so they're working on that. There's a new, you know, leach pad that was just built, and they're adding ounces with the, you know, drill bit. Every month or two, the company puts out more results, and they continue to drill this resource out. And, you know, you talk to the company, you know, Mike Allen, the CEO, he's pretty confident they have over 1 million ounces there at Moss, and it's just going to take time to prove that. But if you think about, let's say they do get the output up to 40 to 45,000 ounces a year, and there is 1 million ounces there, you've got a pretty long mine life there. And then that's not even talking about the Hercules project that you mentioned, and then also all the exploration potential at Moss. This is a huge property package, and the mine area and the mine infrastructure is a very small, like, postage stamp size footprint on this property package. Lots of sexy drill targets there. If you read the article that I wrote, I mentioned Florence Hill. So this is they're going to drill that in Q1. And actually, I am really excited about that target. I think the Florence Hill area could be a new discovery in the making. Obviously, we have to drill it. We need to see the, you know, results, but the market's not giving them any credit for any of that stuff. So I like it. Obviously, I've been wrong so far as it continues to trend lower, but this is a pretty damn good opportunity in my estimation, sub $1 per share.
Well, Robert, just along the topic here of Elevation Gold Mine. And full disclosure, I'm also a shareholder of Elevation. I was involved when it was Northern Vertex before the merger with Eclipse. And honestly, I wasn't impressed with the merger, just to be completely transparent, because I didn't understand why they were buying an asset that was so earlier stage when they could have bought a producing asset or something that was already further along that could feed their development pipeline. But what I always saw was the opportunity around Moss to expand the mine and to expand the mine life. Do you like that kind of a model where they have that upside exploration potential to feed the production, and they're not really getting credit for it right now because they're only being looked at in a vacuum as to what they produced last quarter as opposed to where this could grow? Or do you like that they have this other Hercules project, this complete blue sky upside that they're almost getting zero credit for? What angle do you like more, the production growth aspect or the exploration side of this?
You know, that's a great question, Chad. And I wrote that in my article that it's tricky when you put a small mine asset, you know, fully permitted mine, but a relatively small one, like 30,000, 35,000 ounces of gold output per year is not going to set the world on fire. It's not, you know, it's very limited in what sort of evaluation you can get on that, right? So I actually like this company more for the exploration upside, to be completely honest. And so whether it's, you know, Hercules or at some of the targets that they have, those, you know, to the south at Moss, the one I mentioned at the, you know, Florence Hill, I think that's really where the big upside is here. Now, obviously, if they can fine tune their mining operations and lower costs a bit and increase output, that's going to be great. But I think that to really get this up to $150 or $200 million market cap again, or in the future, you know, we're going to need to see some new exploration hits, some big hits on step out targets. So that's why I'm actually excited to see them move a rig or two to some of those exploration targets at Moss.
Okay, in full disclosure, I am also a shareholder of Elevation Gold Mining. I came over from the Eclipse side of that transaction, but you know what? They do have production, they are cash flowing, and there is exploration upside, but boy, oh boy, that stock has definitely been crushed this year. Let's move on to Angold Resources then. Traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol AAU, also on the OTC markets under the symbol AAUGF. This company holds a handful of projects. The main project, the Iron Butte project in Nevada. They also hold two projects in Chile, as well as the Uchi project in Ontario, Canada. What do you like about Angold here, Robert?
Well, you know, honestly, Corey, I think the thing I like most about Angold is the management team. You know, this is a top-notch, you know, management team. I like the CEO. They have Doug Ramshaw and Michael Connor as advisors to the company. A very strong team there. And honestly, in junior mining, the most important aspect of a junior mining company is typically the management team. A bad management team can, you know, ruin shareholder value with the best projects out there. And a strong management team can take, you know, mediocre projects and advance them and make value for shareholders. And so I like Angold for that. The valuation at what, 11, 12, 13 million market cap in Canada, that's barely more than a Shell valuation. And as you mentioned, they have an extensive project portfolio, four different projects, South America, Canada, and the U.S. The main focus is the project in the, you know, U.S. near the Battle Mountain trend. And basically what you have there is you have a historic resource near surface, you know, sort of oxide, you know, resource of more than 600,000 ounces. But the idea, the concept is it's a low sulfidation epithermal system that has not been drilled to depth. So while there has been work done on the project, it has been drilled historically. And, you know, there's this 600,000 ounces at about 2/3 of a gram that's been outlined near surface. That's probably not going to set the world on fire by itself. What you need is you need to get that over 1 million ounces, and hopefully above 2 million ounces and find some higher grade gold at depth. And so that's what Angold's going to be doing early in the new year. They will drill this project to depth to try to find the boiling zone, the higher grade sweet spot of this system. And they've been doing the work that you need to do to optimize your drill targeting. Because, like, you know, a lot of investors would just love to see companies put a million holes in the ground and let's keep drilling. But it's very expensive, especially in this part of the world, the southwest of the, you know, U.S., a big mining area, lots of projects being drilled out down there. And it's very expensive. Diamond core drilling, $350 a meter, $400 a meter in some areas. You can burn through a treasury very quickly by just trying to drill 400 meter holes all over the place, right? So they've been doing the work that they need to optimize the you know, drill targeting. And so that we will get that maiden program, the Diamond Core program, early in 2022.
Well, Robert, on a company like Angold, and it doesn't have to just be Angold, but it could be any project like this where it's a relatively new explorer. They've got their flagship with Iron Butte, but they've also got the four projects. And as you just outlined, it's expensive just to drill the one project. So sometimes investors don't put much value into the other two or three projects, and companies are left with few choices, either to leave them on the shelf or to sporadically go down and drill them. Or sometimes they'll bring in a JV partner and option part of those other projects out just to move those along. Sometimes they eventually will spin those projects out if the other project goes primary. How do you value the overall explorer when, you know, clearly most of the action is where they're drilling and on the flagship? And then the other question would be, because of those expenses you just outlined, do you want them to get the value from the market where they hit those higher grade zones, and that's usually what's going to increase the valuation of Explorer? Or do you want to see them making measured progress to get it to that million ounces and get economic studies on and move it down the development pipeline? Sometimes in that development pipeline, companies kind of go stale as well. So what do you think the main driver for a company like Angold with so many different projects and so many different
businesses? With Iron Butte, it's pretty clear to me that the near surface resource that they have, 600,000 ounces or so, is probably not enough to be economic. It's not enough to make this project valuable by itself. It's a very nice starting point, though, because if they can expand that resource, you know, along strike at depth and find some higher grades, then suddenly you really have something in basically the best state for mining in the U.S., you know, very attractive location for, you know, a gold mining project. So I think that's why they need to drill this, and that's the priority right now. That's quite clear. But you're right, it's four projects across two continents. That's a tall order for $12 or $13 million, you know, junior. So yeah, it's challenging. I think that what companies have to do is they have to steadily advance each project and figure out what the market actually really wants to see. Because at the end of the day, you're at the whim of the market. You're going to have to come back to the market to raise capital, to continue to do exploration work. And so you need to figure out what the market wants to see. And I think Angold has figured out what the market wants to see. We want this project drilled early in 2022. And then based upon the results of that drilling, they'll know what to do. If they drill 10 dusters and there's no boiling zone to be found, then focus on South America or Canada, right? If we hit the boiling zone and we hit 20 meters of 30 grams, then all systems go on this. And it's very clear what your flagship is then, right?
That is true. I think the company has done work on most of these, maybe all of these projects that they hold. And it seems like they are just waiting for the market and the drill bit to tell them which one they really need to go after. But all of these projects have shown some indication of mineralization. So, yeah, who knows? We followed along with them and we will be following back up with them. But it has been a tough year for Angold, just like a few of these other stocks we're going to talk about. Next one being Outback Goldfields. You mentioned this at the onset. Now, this company is traded on the CSE under the symbol OZ, also on the OTC market under the symbol OZBKF. Now, I am a shareholder of this company as well. And look, they came out of the gate not that long ago at the very beginning of this year. And unfortunately, it's been under a lot of pressure. A lot of that being because the company has four projects in the Victorian goldfields of Australia. Australia went through a pretty harsh lockdown. So the company was handcuffed in terms of the work they could do throughout this year on those projects. What do you like about Outback? What has your interest here?
Well, Corey, kind of like with Angold, I like the management team. I like the CEO. I think he's a great person to have at the helm who really knows this business backwards and forwards. They have a good advisor team, a good board. And then you have four projects, as you mentioned, in a prolific area of gold mining in Australia, right? And so Outback came to market at the end of 2020, amid a bit of fanfare and optimism. I think it had at one point a 60 or 65 million market cap, which is a pretty chunky market cap for an early stage, explorer, right? These are all pretty early stage projects that haven't had a lot of work done on them. Great location, and clearly a lot of smoke, but obviously a lot of work on the ground, whether it's soil sampling or mapping or IP surveys or, what have you, all this ground, all this pre-drilling work that has to be done to set the stage for a successful diamond core program. And so the company's been doing a lot of that work in 2021, and obviously the market wants to see drill results. And the market is very impatient for drill results. And they actually had a drill program that was supposed to happen in June at one of their projects that got pushed back. And so that will happen early in the new year. I like the management team. I think the valuation is pretty damn cheap here. And all they need to do is have one of these four projects be a winner, hit some good intercepts, and it's going to be worth a hell of a lot more than $13 or $14 million, market valuation. One of the projects that probably helped to get it such a hot start at that $60 million market cap is called, Silver Spoon. And that's near Kirkland Lake Gold's Fosterville mine. It's literally adjacent to it. So you can imagine, if your claims are bordering on one of the highest grade, most profitable gold mines in the history of the world, it's pretty sexy, and it's going to get the market's attention. It's going to get people's attention. They're going to want it to be drilled, right? And so we will see Outback drill Silver Spoon in mid-2022. And honestly, purely from a trading standpoint, so let's forget about long-term investing, what Outback is ultimately going to be worth 5 years from now. Just from a trading standpoint, if you're buying the stock here, which by the way, I am, and by the way, I own all the shares of the companies that we're talking about in this conversation, if you're buying it at 20 cents a share down from a dollar, just as the new year turns and anticipation builds for that maiden, drill program at Silver Spoon next to Fosterville, the Fosterville gold mine, the share price could easily just double on anticipation of that first program at Silver Spoon. The market hasn't cared about Silver Spoon in 2021 because they weren't planning to get out there yet, but they will in mid-2022.
Well, Robert, I got to ask on this one because I'm trying to think of questions that could also apply to everybody else in their portfolio of explorers. This is clearly an area play, this whole area of Victoria near the Fosterville mine. There are probably a half dozen new exploration companies drilling around them. Three or four of them are adjacent to the Fosterville mine, and they all outline that in their corporate presentations. One of their neighbors and one of the neighboring explorers hit a big hole this year, and it sent it screaming up. Do you think that gives it some added zest when it's in these area plays? So whether it's the Pilbara, whether it's Timmins, whether it's the Golden Triangle, in this case, this near this Fosterville mine that Kirkland Lake had, do you think that area play just by default gets more eyeballs? So if they do hit something near that property, it's just going to get more traction. Is that part of the angle as well?
I mean, absolutely. This is an area of Australia where more than 80 million ounces of gold has been pulled out of the earth. And obviously Fosterville, with its grades of, what, 20, 25 grams per ton gold, multi-million ounce, you know, mine that's made huge profits for Kirkland Lake. Yeah, I mean, if you hit a hot intercept like E79 did, you know, earlier this year, you hit something like 100 grams plus over, you know, 5, 6, God forbid, 10 meters, you know, this is going to just catch fire, right? It's going to be a huge, you know, it's going to be a huge gainer. You know, that's obvious, but you got to drill those holes. You got to actually do it. It's one thing to talk about and speculate like we are now. It's another thing to actually put out the, you know, results.
Yes, it is. And results are truly what do move stocks, especially in markets that we have been here where no one seems to be front running any drill results right now. Robert, before we get you out of here, we have time for one more company. You do have three more companies in this article, though, so I'm going to leave it up to you. Which one do you want to highlight before we wrap this up?
Well, Corey, I'd like to also say that Angold and Elevation are sponsors of Energy and Gold, a website that I write for. Let's talk about Vanstar. So they're not a sponsor of anything I'm affiliated with. I do own the stock. I've been buying it in the low 40s, and they have a 1/4 stake. So they own 1/4 of the, you know, Nelligan, you know, gold project in Chibougamau, Canada. So this is a 3.2 million ounce inferred resource at an average grade of 1.02 grams per ton gold. Their partner is IAM Gold. So that's a much larger gold mining company with mines in various places around the world. IAM Gold is more focused right now, it seems, on one of their gold mines in Africa. But they're still drilling at Nelligan. In fact, they just completed 10,000 meters there, and we'll get, you know, results from that program over the coming months. And IAM Gold plans to drill at least another 5,000 meters there in early 2022. So IAM Gold is advancing this project and clearly trying to expand that 3.2 million ounces to something more, 4 or 5 million ounces. And so you have to ask yourself, what is 1/4 of a multi-million ounce gold mine in a great area of Canada for mining worth, you know? And right now Vanstar is valued at about a 24, 25 million market cap on the venture. In my estimation, their interest in Nelligan is worth more than their entire current market cap. Now, you know, kind of something that we've discussed previously was, well, when you're a minority owner in a mining project and you're sort of at the whim of the major or the much larger company, it sometimes isn't so great for the shareholders of the junior. And I agree with that. But I have to think that the value here will be unlocked in one way, shape, or form over the next year or two. It's too valuable to have this project with 3.5 to 4 million ounces of gold in a great location with good infrastructure and very favorable for mining. And not have the value realized for Vanstar. And so we're not even talking about Vanstar's own wholly owned projects, which they have their own set of 4 or 5 early stage exploration projects in Canada. I'm just focusing on the, you know, Nelligan asset, not even mentioning they have 5 million cash in the treasury. It's worth more than their entire 25 million market cap. So I like my odds, and nothing is a sure thing in the market. That's for sure. There is risk, obviously, but I like my odds of buying here around 40, 42 cents a share and waiting for the company and the sector to come back in favor in 2022.
Robert, I was going to ask you about this kind of a company. I'm really glad you picked this one because it's a good case study for when there is a partial ownership in a project and one of the big boys has the remaining stake. Some investors really like that because it shows the larger company has vetted the project and believes in it and they've got a lot more wherewithal than most retail investors do to vet out, is this something they think is prospective? So from that standpoint, it's a huge plus for the company that they've partnered with one of the larger producers. But the other side of it is it's harder to value the company for exactly how you outlined it. You know, they only own a part of it. What's it worth? And then they're kind of at the whim of the larger company as far as how quickly they want to move it. Do you like to see the exit strategy more where the larger company buys that project from them and they keep those other projects going on the side? Or do you like to see it where they could be a potential takeover candidate from the larger company? And does that factor into your investment process, or is it strictly just the value you think the major will bring to that project over time?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky question, Chad. And I think that obviously if one company owns all of, you know, Nelligan, the valuation for the project would be more than when it's segmented where there's a three-quarter owner, a 70% owner, a 25% or 30% owner. And obviously, if you're the minority owner, you get punished a little bit for being the minority owner. You're not going to get that full valuation that you would normally get when you're the operator of the project. But I think in this case, Vanstar has something really valuable because they have a full carried interest. So this, they don't have to pay for any of the drilling or the feasibility study to advance this project to being a fully permitted mine. Only once it's permitted and they're pouring gold ounces does Vanstar have to start paying the bills for their ratio that they own. Also, something I didn't mention is that Vanstar has a 1% net smelter royalty on 8 of the Nelligan claims. So part of the project that will likely be mined at some point in the future, they have a net smelter royalty of 1% on it. So how much is that worth? I don't know. It could be worth $5 million someday. It might be worth more or less. I don't know. But there's a lot of value when you add it all up. And I think it's worth quite a bit more than the company's current market cap. And obviously, if IAM Gold chooses to do the feasibility study and then go through permitting and really advance this to being an operating mine, that value is going to be unlocked. It's just a waiting game. Is it going to take 3 years? Is it going to take 4 years? Is it going to take 5 years? You know, we don't know. But obviously, if that timeline starts to become more visible and we see the larger company really start to advance this, then I think the market really starts to pay more attention to Vanstar at that point.
All right, Robert, we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for spending this really extended time frame with us to go through some of these companies that do have your attention into the end of the year. And again, look, it's been a rough year for a lot of these companies. We need some good news to come out of the companies. And we also just need generally better sentiment in the metals sector. Who knows, maybe that'll all come next year, but the best thing we can all do is simply keep an eye on the companies we like and I guess try to buy whenever we're comfortable with it. And again, hopefully the market can help out on the back end of those purchases. Robert, thank you as always for your time. Everybody, stick around. We're going to be right back to wrap up the weekend edition.
Thanks, Corey.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.